A Way of Communicating with Dr. Jeffrey Carr. Introduction.
Welcome. I'm going to show you something you can use to improve every area of your life. It's true. It will help you to improve your life with your family, with friends, at work, how you feel, and even your physical and mental health. And using this will promote happiness and well-being for others, particularly those closest to you. And you don't need to take my word for it, prove it to yourself. The vehicle we're going to use for this journey is a way of communicating called the iCar. It's entirely free, and all you have to do to get the benefits is to use it. You may be wondering how the way we communicate can have such a dramatic impact on our lives and on the lives of others. It really is huge. In the couples I've worked with over the past 30 years, their distress, often the hell they've been living in, is inevitably turned around if they use these skills. People communicating with their bosses, co-workers, employees, parents talking with their children, and yes, even teaching children how to communicate with their parents, bad situations get better, and even good situations can improve into heavenly ones. And that shouldn't be too hard to believe. Think about how much your distress in a typical day is related to other people not understanding you, or what you want, or seeming not to care. And I promise you that people you interact with are often left with the impression that you don't understand them, or what they want, and don't seem to care. The tragic thing is that this will happen even if we do understand and care, unless we develop real skill at communicating. These skills will only really be useful if you want to increase understanding, cooperation, and connection in your relationships. If your goal is to achieve power over others through manipulation and control, then what I have to say won't be of any use to you.
A quote from George Bernard Shaw. The single biggest problem in communication is the illusion that it has taken place.
Let me introduce you to the iCar. It's not some new technology, but actually old, tried and true technology that I simply repackaged for your convenience. The acronym stands for Intention, Compassion, Appreciation, and Responsibility. Intention refers to what we are intending to achieve by saying what we do, and it's in lowercase letters because it's mostly an internal assessment that we may not express. Compassion refers to how we respond to what others say or do. It's about entering into the other person's world with caring, reflected in how we acknowledge their experience. Appreciation is about the importance of us expressing the things that we genuinely like about others. Responsibility refers to how we express our experience. It involves us fully honoring our own experience, telling our truth, but without blaming others or our circumstances. Finally, here's a bit of a teaser. If you become an exceptionally skilled person with the iCar, you can graduate to an even higher level, the iCare. The E refers to encourage, the skill of supporting others in following their hearts to choose what they really value. You can also learn all about encouragement here, but it is really, really difficult and is built upon the other skills which have to be mastered first.
Intention.
Let's look at each of these skills a bit more deeply. First, our intentions. Why am I communicating with this person, and what do I hope to achieve? Imagine considering this before I open my mouth. When we practice reflecting on why we're speaking before we engage our mouths, we're much more likely to get the results that we desire. We usually don't give our intentions much thought, and it requires reflection and honest self-examination to become conscious of it. We often have a surface intention, such as giving the other person information. Actually, the correct way to cut carrots is, but usually also a deeper intention, such as wanting the other person to behave differently, wanting to put them down, or wanting to win an argument. If we want to communicate well, we need to reflect upon these. What's my real intention? The deeper intention will likely be apparent in our voice, tone, or body language. Others are often sensitive to our deeper intentions and react to what they perceive them to be. So communication difficulties are often related to us believing that we're communicating one thing, but the other person perceiving something quite different. For example, I am prone to being impatient, and while I may say one thing in words, my body language and my voice tone can betray my impatience. So, if I don't take time to notice my intention, then I'll end up giving the other person the message that they should hurry up or that they're somehow slow. If I notice my impatience, then I have a choice about how I express myself to others. I could let the other person know that I'm feeling impatient. I could let him know that I'd like him to hurry up. I could let him know that I'm feeling impatient, but I don't actually want him to rush. I might not say anything about feeling impatient, take a breath, and focus on what I really want out of this conversation.
Compassion.
The next skill is compassion. This is about how we respond to what others have said. Susan tells us that she doesn't like how we've cleaned up the kitchen. What do we say? Pierre is elated that he won an important contract. How do we respond? Our boss, Abdul, wants us to research 3 issues and report back to him. What would we best say? Going back to Susan, if she told you that she didn't like how you cleaned up the kitchen, how would you usually respond? Would you tell her that she'll try to do better? Would you tell her that she's being too picky? Would you complain that she's always criticizing you? Would you tell her about how much work you've done around the house, about how tired you are and that you'll finish it tomorrow? What about Pierre? Would you tell him that he should be very proud of having won the contract? Or would you tell him that he must have got lucky? Would you tell him not to get a swelled head over it? What would you say to Abdul when he asks you to do research and report back? Would you say, "Yes, sir"? Would you complain that you won't have time to get it done? Would you tell him you don't understand what he expects? There are lots of different ways to respond to these situations, but none of the examples I just gave you included compassion. None of these common ways of responding included a compassionate acknowledgement of the other person's experience. Responding with compassion involves us seeing the world through the eyes of other people, taking a walk in their shoes. We then show them that we understand their experience, not by telling them that we do, but by showing them. We do this primarily by acknowledging what they've just expressed to us. We say to Susan, "I get that you're disappointed with my cleaning job." Or, "I know you really like the kitchen really clean." Or, "I see you're frustrated with having to tell me this again." There are dozens of different ways we could have responded compassionately to Susan, and the critical thing is that we are focused on her experience. We start with that. It may not be all we say, but we begin there. This fairly simple practice is by far the most important single thing you can do to improve your communication. When Pierre tells us excitedly about having won the contract, compassion involves our attention being on his experience, not on our judgments or reactions. We could say, "You won the health contract. I know how much that meant to you." Or, "Wow, you must be delighted after having worked so hard to get it." When Abdul asks us to do the research and report back, we can say, "So, you'd like me to look into supply sources, costs, and logistics, and get a written report to you by Thursday." Or, "I get you're in a rush for this, so to confirm, you want this researched and on your desk by Thursday." Again, you can put it in dozens of different ways, but you are focused on what Abdul has asked. A huge amount of conflict and distress in relationships happens when someone believes that we didn't hear, understand, or care about what they said. This is a problem whether or not we actually understood them. If I understood, but they don't know that I did, we have a problem. Fortunately, it's easily remedied by me simply letting the other person know what I heard them say. If a person is upset, simply hearing that we understand what is bothering them is the most potent way of decreasing their upset. When others understand our experience, we feel better, even if they don't do anything to change what is bothering us. Paul may be really angry with me for not lending him my saw. But if I say, "Paul, I realize you're really PO'd about this, that you've lent me other things before, and it seems selfish of me not to lend you my saw," Paul will calm down. As I've watched thousands of times, when I or others respond with compassion, others relax. He doesn't need to fight me anymore because I obviously understand his experience. He'll then also be far more receptive to hearing any reasons I may have for not lending it to him. So, compassion is not about being nice or accommodating. Also, while compassion is where we begin in responding to another person, it's not necessarily where we end. We may have a very different view of things than the other person, and we may express that. We may not be willing to do what someone else is asking of us and tell them that. As I'll describe in a few minutes, though, how we express our different view, namely responsibly, is profoundly important.
Appreciation.
Continuing in the eye care model, following intention and compassion comes appreciation. This is such a simple one that I won't say much about it, but expressing appreciation is really important. Thanks for taking out the garbage. I really appreciate you taking care of your homework without being asked. I find you particularly attractive tonight. I really appreciate you being on top of the kids' activities. As John Gottman found in his research with couples, relationships can withstand a fair amount of conflict and criticism, but only if there's lots of expression of appreciation. This isn't rocket science. If, over the course of the day, Harriet expresses appreciation for a dozen different things that you've done or things she likes about you, but also mentions a couple of things she found frustrating, you'll probably be able to hear about those things pretty easily. If, however, Harriet hasn't said one positive thing about you all day and tells you about those same two things that have bugged her, you likely won't receive it so well. If this goes on day after day of criticism without appreciation, then you and Harriet are not going to have a good relationship. So, let people know things you appreciate about them. Don't keep them a secret. The problem is that there may be lots of things that we appreciate about someone, but if we don't express it, or express it infrequently, they will not know. We have to make a conscious effort to express appreciation until it becomes a habit. In the couples I've worked with, spouses are usually quite surprised to find out what their partner actually appreciates about them. This can be after decades of marriage. There are lots of reasons we may be reluctant to express appreciation. We may think what he did is expected, so somehow doesn't warrant our appreciation. "So he cooked dinner. It's his job. I shouldn't have to thank him for that. Or we may withhold any appreciation due to our resentment towards someone, as if our appreciation would somehow discount what we're unhappy about. Sure, she went out of her way to pick me up from work, but I'm still mad from her crack about my weight. Of course, the result is that others will be left with the impression that we don't like them, don't love them, or even hate them, when these things aren't true. It should be pretty obvious, though, that if someone mainly tells us the things they don't like about us, that we're going to believe that they don't like us. Expressing appreciation involves letting other people know things that we genuinely like about them or what they have done. It can involve small appreciations, such as over something someone has just done. Thanks for jumping in to help. Or a larger appreciation about some characteristic they have. I love how generous you are. It is not about being nice. Oh, let me get you some tea. It is not about saying things that aren't true for us. If you don't appreciate something, don't pretend that you do. And it does not involve backhand compliments. Oh, you finally took out the garbage. Thanks. While it's valuable to express our appreciations for day-to-day things, it's particularly important to share them when we're in conflict with someone. If, for example, Susan criticizes you for not cleaning the kitchen well enough, the conversation will turn out much better if you mention your appreciation for Susan keeping on top of housekeeping. When someone is critical of us, while we may not like it, we can still express some real appreciation. Well, I'm sorry you didn't like how I did that, though I do appreciate you letting me know. That felt a bit harsh, but I like that you don't beat around the bush. Or, yeah, I suppose I was a bit of a jerk. I really hate to admit it, but thanks for calling me on it. Finally, by frequently expressing our appreciation of others, we make ourselves increasingly aware of the many things we do that we do appreciate about others, which contributes to our happiness and well-being. So, others end up feeling good, we end up feeling good. What's not to like?
Responsibility.
While compassion refers to how we reply to what other people have said, responsibility refers to how we express our experience to others. It means that we recognize that our perceptions, our beliefs, our desires, our feelings, and our limits are ours. That's how I saw it. This is what I believe. It's what I want. It's how I feel. As much as we might like to believe that our views reflect some ultimate reality, that we are right, we can't ever be 100% sure of this. And when we presume that we are right, problems in our relationships are inevitable. What we do know about, however, is our experience of the world, and this we can express to others. This is often reflected in the use of I statements. I think that's a beautiful car. For me, I would have preferred the blue one. My impression is that he didn't care about doing a careful job. I believe the Liberal Democrats will ruin this country. So, rather than saying the team's old uniforms looked much better than their new ones, we can more responsibly say, I like the team's old uniforms better than the new ones. Same message, just responsible. Rather than saying, it's stupid to focus on that issue, I could say, I'd rather focus on another issue. Or, I don't think it's useful to spend our time on that issue. Being responsible means that we can openly express our views, fully honoring that this is what I perceive or believe, but without the arrogance of expecting that others should share the same views, And when we express ourselves responsibly, we are much less likely to get into an ego-driven conflict over who is right and who is wrong. Instead, our attention becomes focused on our different experience, something more likely to evoke curiosity over our differences. Expressing our feelings responsibly is similar. It means that we don't blame others for our feelings or for what we do. We realize that someone else in our shoes might have felt differently and have behaved differently. This can be difficult to grasp. When someone hits us, we feel pain. When someone we love dies, we feel sadness. It's therefore not a big leap to conclude that the other person or the event made us feel as we do. The problem is that there's an intermediate step, the us, that we aren't taking responsibility for. Even if 99% of people in the situation would feel the same way that you do, there is still the other 1%. If another person can feel differently in that situation, it shows that you must play some role in developing your feelings. And in most situations, lots of people would feel differently than we do. That doesn't make our feelings wrong. Feelings can never be wrong, and we have every right to feel what we do. Once we accept responsibility for our feelings, we immediately eliminate a whole lot of statements that get us into communication difficulties. You made me feel mad. Statements like this are common. You make me so angry. Stop making me feel guilty. You're hurting my feelings. It's not brain surgery to see how these kinds of statements will ruin communication. The other person is likely to experience being blamed by you and then proceed to defend himself or criticize you back. Irresponsible statements like this put the focus on the other person instead of on us and our feelings, where it would best be. Responsible communication, on the other hand, is fully accepting of what we feel and involves simply stating the relationship between some event and our feelings, such as, when you, I felt. So, for example, when you were late, I felt really annoyed. To be super responsible, we can actively acknowledge our role in our feelings, such as, when you're late, I get myself so worked up. Here I'm acknowledging that I'm getting myself bent out of shape, recognizing that someone else might not. To tie this together, expressing ourselves responsibly means that we can express whatever we are experiencing, but we do it without blaming others for our feelings or behavior, and without arrogantly assuming that our views are right. In this way, we are revealing our experience to others in a way that is most likely to promote them understanding us. Instead of provoking conflict, the more responsible we are, the more we promote connection and closeness.
Encourage.
As I noted earlier, if you decide to take the ICAR model to the next level, you'll be learning about how to encourage others. Now, you're probably thinking that this will be easy, that you encourage people all the time. Oh, come on, Sarah. I think you should go for it. You've got the skill, experience, and I know you'll do great. Sounds good, huh? Not so much. At the heart of encouragement is literally heart, from the French word cœur. So encouragement means supporting others in developing the courage to follow their hearts, to choose what really matters to them. What I actually did in the example was to tell Sarah what I think she should do and why I think she should do it. For several reasons, this backfires. And it's easy to see why. If you think about a difficult situation in your own life, you'll realize that as soon as someone starts trying to talk you into something, you'll quickly come up with the reasons against it. While your friend might be trying to talk you into doing something good for you, it ends up provoking you to talk yourself out of doing it. Imagine that Mindy has been in a relationship with an abusive guy. Her friend Alicia says, "Come on, girl, you gotta dump that a-hole. He's been treating you like crap, lying and cheating on you. You're a beautiful woman with lots of other options." And what is Mindy likely to say? "Yeah, you're right. I should leave him. But it's not all bad. He can be really sweet, and he buys me nice things. And he says he won't cheat on me anymore, and we have great plans for our wedding, etc." If Mindy's decision was so black and white, she would have left the guy a long time ago. She's staying because there are things about him that she likes and doesn't want to lose. And as soon as Alicia tells her about the reasons to leave, she'll think, "Yes, but," and think about all the reasons she wants to stay. The most important thing about encouragement is your intention to support the other person in making their decision, not in telling them what you think is best for them. The more that we can avoid directing others, telling them what to do, the more likely they'll make the best decision for themselves and develop the courage to do so in the future. So, how can we actively encourage others? The most important way is one you already know about: compassionately acknowledging the other person's experience. Research shows that even among trained therapists, their skill at compassionately acknowledging people's experience is the most important factor in facilitating their clients' improvement. When someone accurately captures what we're saying, it helps us to become clearer about our own experience. The benefits of making a difficult choice become more apparent to us. So Alicia could best help Mindy by compassionately saying, "I get how hard it's been for you living with Jason. He's betrayed you so many times. Sometimes he treats you good and you feel hopeful. But then he always gets mean again. That really sucks, Mindy." She's just acknowledging what Mindy has told her. There are also useful questions Alicia could then ask Mindy that are likely to support her courage. "What do you think you'll do now?" There are many questions like this that promote people talking about making a difficult choice. Talking about making a difficult choice helps give us the courage to follow through. Finally, while telling others what to do is not encouraging, responsibly expressing our own feelings can be. So, Alicia could say, "I know that there are some good things about Jason. I just find it really painful to watch you getting hurt over and over." This clearly conveys Alicia's caring for her friend, but without telling her what to do. Obviously, knowing that we are cared about by others promotes us feeling better, and when we feel good about ourselves, we become more courageous.
Summary.
To summarize, this ICAR or I Care way of communicating is based on a desire to promote a genuine understanding between ourselves and others. Through using these skills, we are most likely to actually understand another person's experience. They will get that we understand, and others are most likely to listen to our experience without becoming defensive. This reduces conflict, increases closeness and cooperation, and leads to increased happiness and well-being for you and others. In this video, I've given you an overview, but it won't do you much good unless you learn more about the skills and actively practice them. Like all skills, communication skills need to be practiced in order for us to get better at them. We don't expect to be a good pianist by reading a book on music theory, or a good soccer player by watching a game on television. And we have to practice in low-stress situations first. Watching these videos and then waiting for a big fight to begin using the skills would be like having your first driving lesson during rush hour traffic. Make it easy for yourself. Practice the skills during non-stressful times. The more these communication skills are practiced and become automatic, the easier it'll be to use them when you most need them. At this point, I invite you to ask yourself a question. How much time is something that can improve every area of your life worth to you? How much time would you be willing to work on it each day? Next up, more about how to respond to others with compassion.
You can find more at feelgoodforfree.com or drjeffreycarr.com.